Turning your Bibles to Ruth chapter 3. What is God's will for your life? And how should you pursue it? Many people think of God's will for their lives as a specific pathway that that they should follow into the future. They think about God's will for their future. It's as if God knows what the pathway for the future is and He's laid it out for them. And so we think, well, what we should do if we want to please God, if we want to fulfill His will in our lives, I need to discover what that pathway is and make sure that I stay on this track of exactly what God would want for me. And so they believe that if they would discover His will and marry the right person and take the right job and live in the right town, do the right thing with their house, if I find God's will and I stay in that pathway, then I'm going to know on this pathway God's blessing and His help. But if I accidentally make the wrong choice and I take this job instead of that one and I live in this place instead of that one, then, well, I'm gonna be kind of lost. I'll have lost all that God meant for my life. I don't think that that's how we are to think about God's will. I love what Kevin DeYoung writes in his book, Just Do Something. He says this: God is not a magic eight ball that we shake up and peer into whenever we have a decision to make. He is a good God who gives us brains, shows us the way of obedience, and then invites us to take risks for Him. Ruth 3 is a beautiful example of how we believers in God should live our lives. You do not see the characters in Ruth 3 worrying about missing God's will. You don't see them stutter-stepping, waiting for signs, laying out foolish fleeces like Gideon did in Judges. The Christian life is not a maze. It's not a mystery. It's an adventure. And here's how you live it. This is what God calls you to in your Christian life. Trust in God and then act in love toward the people around you. Trust in God and act in love toward the people around you, and you will find God will direct you to blessing. We see that here in this chapter. Each of the three main characters will illustrate this for us tonight. First, we want to start with Naomi. Naomi trusted in God and acted in love toward Ruth. Ruth chapter 3, verse 1. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, shall I not seek security for you, that it may be well with you?" Things at this point in Ruth are much better for these two widows than they were back at the end of chapter 1. Through the kindness of Boaz, God has provided for them food. And through the kindness of Boaz, Naomi is a transformed woman. She is no longer at this point a bitter and empty widow, but she is one who is convinced that God's loyal love to her continues. But not all of Naomi and Ruth's problems have been solved. Still, neither of them has a husband. Naomi has no heir to carry on her husband's name. There's no one to take the land that belongs to them. And Naomi is much too old to have any more children herself. However, since their arrival at Bethlehem, there have been some encouraging developments. For one, there's this man Boaz, a relative of Naomi's, who has been extremely kind to Ruth. For 2 months now, Ruth has been going out and working day by day in Boaz's fields. Naomi probably hoped that Boaz would, at some point in these 2 months, reach out to Ruth and more than meeting physical needs, more than giving her food. She's hoping that Boaz is going to pursue marriage, I think. But now, 2 months have come and gone, harvest is over, and Ruth is not going to be able to see Boaz anymore. The time is up on their relationship. I know what it's like to date on a time crunch, to have a relationship with a deadline at the end of it. When Chris and I were together in college, from the time that I first asked her out, I knew that this is how I viewed it. We have an 11-month window if this relationship is going to succeed, because I was going to go to California and go to the Master Seminary. And so from the first time that I asked her out, I had kind of a schedule in my mind. Like, you know, someone had told me that you need to be engaged for 6 months before you get married. So that meant I've got 5 months to get up to the point of engagement. And then you back that up a little bit. How much time does that give before I should ask her to be my girlfriend? How much time until maybe I hold her hand for the first time? I kind of had a plan, you know. But the thing with Boaz that Naomi is frustrated about, Boaz is he's not sensing the urgency here. He's got 2 months to build this relationship with Ruth, and 2 months are gone, nothing has happened. And so Boaz is just going to go home, and Ruth is going to come back to the house, and this is not how this was supposed to happen. Naomi was hoping for this to go differently, and she loves Ruth. She's motivated by love for Ruth. She wants to provide for her. See that in verse 1? You see Naomi's motive. She's coming up with this scheme, with this crazy plan. But she's doing it out of love for Ruth. You can see it here. Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, shall I not seek security for you, that it may be well with you?" So, what exactly is Naomi's plan? She has one. It starts with some facts. Verse 2, she says, "Now is not Boaz our kinsman?" Now, this is very important for us to understand for the rest of the way through the book of Ruth. What's she saying when she says, "No, Boaz is our kinsman"? To understand that a little better, hold your finger here in Ruth and go over to Deuteronomy 25. Boaz is related to Naomi through her ex-husband, who's now passed away. In Israel in this time, it was very important for them to be able to have a descendant that could carry on the family name. And to have a descendant that could live on the family's land and keep that all together. It was vital to them, and built into the laws were plans so that you could make sure that you keep your family land, you continue the family name. One of the laws that refers to this is in Deuteronomy chapter 25. Look at verses 5 and 6. This is foreign to us as Americans, but to them this was built in. They understood this. They believed these things. Okay, Deuteronomy 25, verse 5. When brothers live together, and one of them dies and has no son, the wife of the deceased shall not be married outside the family to a strange man. Her husband's brother shall go into her and take her to himself as a wife and perform the duty of a husband's brother to her. Verse 6. It shall be that the firstborn whom she bears to the brother of her deceased husband. It shall be that the firstborn whom she bears shall assume the name of his dead brother, so that his name will not be blotted out from Israel. So you get that in Israel. If your brother dies and he leaves his wife childless, your responsibility as the brother is to make sure that there is a child from this relationship that there was no child from. They need to have a descendant to live on their land, to carry on the family name. And so you would marry your brother's ex-wife. And the first child that you would have with your brother's wife, your brother's dead, the first child you would have together would be counted as your brother's child. He would be the official descendant of your brother, so that his name could continue and his land could continue on. This was very important to the Jews. Okay, go back to Ruth. Now, this situation that we read in Deuteronomy 25 does not exactly fit the situation here in Ruth. Boaz is not Elimelech's brother. The letter of the law does not apply exactly here. But everyone agrees, as we go through this story, there's this common understanding that the people, all the characters understand, that if Boaz wants to, he can marry Ruth and then carry on Elimelech's family name. And they've already talked about this in the book of Ruth. This has come up. This is in their minds. And so Naomi reminds Ruth of what she knows. She says, "Now is not Boaz our kinsman?" See, if you were to marry Boaz, that means that we could carry on Elimelech's family name. Okay? Now, there's another fact that Naomi has come up with. She has a spy network out there, and she has discovered something. Not Boaz is our kinsman, with whose maize you were. And then she says, "Behold, he, Boaz, winnows barley at the threshing floor tonight." He winnows barley at the threshing floor tonight. I have some slides here Rich has prepared for us. Here is a threshing floor. These threshing floors, this one is near Gibeon in Israel. You can tell that this is in modern day. There's a road back there. But the threshing floors back in ancient times would have looked very similar to this. They would find a raised level area. The best kind of threshing floor would be one that would have a rock floor, and it looks to me like this might be the case here. Or you could just pack the dirt down really tight because your grain's going to be laying on the ground as you go through this process of threshing it. After you would harvest the grain, you take it to the threshing floor. You can see around the outside edges they have the grain that they've pulled in from the fields, and then inside there's grain that's already been threshed. I think there's another slide. One of the ways that they would thresh this grain, they would have threshing sledges, and you would get a beast, an animal, you stand on the threshing sledge as shown in this picture, go around, the animal would, you'd crush the grain. This is a way of separating the stalk from the grain itself, because you only want to eat the grain, obviously. And then, once you had done that, then there's another process of this. Wow, Rich is just like connecting with me here. That's beautiful. So, that they would do, here's an ancient Egyptian picture. Once the grain has been threshed, sometimes they would do it with those animals, or they just had sticks with a swivel in the middle of it, and they'd beat it out until they got it to the point where it was almost grain. And then what they would do is they would winnow it. And winnowing the grain involved throwing it up in the air. And this required the wind to be blowing. You take the grain, you throw it up in the air, and the heavier grain, the part that you wanted to keep and eat, would fall down, and with the wind is blowing appropriately, it'll blow away the chaff and the husks and the things you don't want farther away. So you end up with the best part of the grain here. And this is what these Egyptians are doing. They're using some sort of, I don't know, looks like knives or something to do their winnowing. Here's another picture. Some other tools they use for winnowing. Essentially, you just got to have something to be able to lift the grain up and throw it into the air. If we back up to the one that was before this, the guy down on the bottom has a winnowing, what's it call it? A different type of device where he's just kind of throwing it up and catching it. But essentially, whatever kind of winnowing tool you prefer, you throw it up in the air and the wind has to blow. Okay, so this is what Naomi is saying. Thanks, Rich, for that. She's saying, look, I've learned that Boaz's crew is going to be out this evening at the threshing floor. This evening. It seems like that the nighttime winds often were better for winnowing. Because you have to have the right kind of wind. You don't want it to be gusty. You want it to be kind of a steady wind coming across. And there's the right kind of wind tonight. And Boaz and his crew are going to be down there. The harvest is over, but they still need to do the winnowing to the grain so that they can use it. And so, Naomi knows that Boaz is going to be out there. Another thing that Naomi knows, how this works, a lot of times as the harvest comes to an end, obviously there's a lot of valuable grain that's sitting out on the threshing floor, and they're working out there and they're winnowing it, but the owner of the property and some of the workers often would sleep out there. The guys would sleep out there by the grain that they've just winnowed, because you don't want a thief to come along and take your grain that's already been harvested and piled up here on the threshing floor. You don't want animals to come in and scavenge. You just got to protect it. And so as they were going through this process, they would sleep out there on the threshing floor. And tonight is the night Boaz is going to be out there. Okay, this is the facts. Here's the plan. Here's Naomi's plan. Ruth chapter 3, verse 3. She says to Ruth, "Wash yourself, therefore, and anoint yourself, and put on your best clothes, and go down to the threshing floor. But do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. It shall be when he lies down that you shall notice the place where he lies, and you shall go and uncover his feet and lie down. Then he will tell you what you shall do." I wonder what Ruth thought of this the first time Naomi came up with this plan. She's like, "This is your plan?" Let's look at some of the details of this. Ruth is first supposed to clean herself up so that she is at her most attractive. She's supposed to take a bath, anoint herself with some perfumed oil, and put on her warm outer garment. It says best clothes in the New American Standard. Ruth's poor. She probably doesn't have fancy clothes. She's putting on her warm outer garment that you could use, poor people would use as blankets at night, because she's going to be spending the night outside if she follows Naomi's plan. So she dresses up, tries to make herself look attractive. Number two, Ruth is to sneak down to the threshing floor before it gets dark. Now here's where Naomi's plan gets risky, right? She's supposed to sneak down there so people don't see her. She's supposed to watch. Now, where is Boaz going to sleep? See where he's going to go. Now, here's what Ruth and Boaz and Naomi knew that we maybe don't. These threshing floors in Israel, they were notorious opportunities for late-night prostitution. Let me read to you. This is Hosea 9:1. God is talking. He's comparing Israel with a harlot. And he says, "For you have played the harlot, forsaking your God. You have loved harlot's earnings on every threshing floor." See, the men would be down there by themselves. And the ladies knew that. And so people that were not moral, there were all kinds of immoral things that would take place. That no one's going to know. You're out there by yourself at the threshing floor. The ladies probably... Ruth is not the only woman sneaking out from town down to the threshing floors in the countryside, if it's typical of how it was often in Israel. And so Naomi's plan, Ruth sneaked down to the threshing floor. There's risk involved. Now, everything in Naomi's plan and everything in Ruth's carrying out of the plan is entirely pure. There are no impure motives here from Ruth or from Naomi. But sneaking down to the threshing floor at night, this is not the kind of thing that a woman of Ruth's character was usually involved in. And if she gets caught, what are people going to think? So here's Naomi's plan. Ruth's to clean herself. She's to sneak down to the threshing floor before it gets dark. And Ruth is supposed to watch Boaz until he falls asleep. See that in the middle of verse 3, "But do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. It shall be when he lies down, you shall notice the place where he lies." Now, this is very important, right? It's going to be dark when she goes up to him and tries to interact with Boaz. And if she goes up to the wrong man might have the wrong idea, right? She needs to know that this is where Boaz is. So Naomi says, okay, watch where he's going to sleep so that when he goes to sleep and it's dark, you can approach him. Okay, fourth part of her plan. When Boaz falls asleep, Ruth is supposed to go uncover Boaz's feet and lie down. And then, when Boaz wakes up, she is supposed to do whatever Boaz tells her. This is the plan. See that in verse 4? "It shall be when he lies down, you shall notice the place where he lies, and you shall go and uncover his feet and lie down. Then he will tell you what you shall do." And this is the end of Naomi's plan for Ruth. Naomi's intention is that Ruth is going to, without words, propose to Boaz. She's going to go and tell him, "Hey, I'm available if you would like to marry me." By these actions, this is what Naomi is hoping Boaz will understand. This is a risky plan, though. Just think of some of the ways this could go wrong. Ruth might get caught. She's sneaking around the edges of these threshing floors at night. She might get caught by someone else and they might have the wrong idea. Her reputation as a worthy woman is at stake here. Also, there's all kinds of men out down at the threshing floors, not all of whom have the same kind of character of Boaz. It's maybe risky for her safety to be going to the threshing floor in the middle of the night. If Boaz were not such a godly man, he might take advantage of Ruth in some way. I think Naomi trusts Boaz. I think Ruth does too. Fourthly, danger is Boaz might misunderstand Ruth's mission. He wakes up in the middle of the night and there's a woman by him at the threshing floor. He might shoo her off as an immoral woman and not understand what's taking place here. Or possibly Boaz might understand what she's doing, that she's proposing marriage to him, and he might just simply turn her down, right? I mean, there's a real possibility of rejection. It's clear throughout the story, Boaz doesn't have to marry Ruth. It's not the law that Boaz has to marry Ruth, otherwise he would have already done it. He's a godly man. He doesn't have to marry her. And so she, a Moabite woman who is poor, is coming and proposing to him. What if he wakes up and says, "Thanks, but no thanks"? What if he thinks, "Boy, this girl's kind of pushy"? Right? I mean, isn't it my job as a man to be proposing? No thanks. They don't know what's going to come of this. Naomi's got this plan, but it's kind of crazy. And so, what's going to happen? Okay, so, Naomi, I believe that behind Naomi's plan is faith in God. That Naomi knows this is kind of crazy, but she's going to trust God. She needs to get Ruth and Boaz together alone so they can talk. And she's been thinking about it for several months, and this is the best she's come up with. Well, if you're alone at the threshing floor, you can talk to him. And so she comes up with this plan, and I think that she's saying, look, Lord, you're the one who sent Ruth accidentally to Boaz's field. You're the one who started this relationship. Now, I'm going to try to help you. Here's what we're going to do next. Lord, will you keep going with what you've done? I think Naomi is putting her faith in God to take care of them. And certainly, she is doing this for Ruth's good. Now, there have been many women who have had plans for the good of their daughters, whose daughters have said, no thanks, Mom. I like your plan, but maybe not, right? I mean, what's Ruth going to do? This is craziness. I think she would have understood it to be, this is a risky plan. So how is Ruth going to respond? Will she say, Naomi, this is too great of a risk? Think of all the things that could go wrong. Let's just, instead of this crazy plan, why don't we just sit back and see if God will work this out for us? Maybe God will provide a more reasonable way forward. If Boaz wanted to be with me, why hasn't he brought it up? Maybe this isn't God's will for us. She could easily have responded that way, but that is not what she does. And look at verse 5. Here is Ruth's response. She said to her, all that you say, I will do. Why? Why does Ruth agree so quickly and readily to Naomi's plan without any questions? Here's what I believe. I believe that Ruth is doing this out of love for Naomi. She loves Naomi, and that is why she responds this way. Now, there may be some love for Boaz in there as well. But later on, Boaz is going to be talking to Ruth, and he will say to her that, Ruth, you could have had your pick of any of these guys out here. You could have married any of the young men in the village if you wanted to. Ruth was not bound, just because she was related to Boaz, to marry Boaz. She could have married any of the young men. But if Ruth marries some other young man, that only benefits Ruth. Ruth gets married. Ruth's needs are met. But if Ruth marries Boaz, who is a kinsman, then this opens up opportunities for blessing for Naomi. Because if she marries Naomi's kinsman, then their kids can count as Naomi's kids. And Ruth and Boaz's kids, or at least their first one, can be the official descendant of Naomi to live on the land. I believe that what Ruth is doing here, when she agrees to this plan, have we already seen that Ruth loves Naomi? That she loves her passionately, recklessly? Yes. And I think this is what is continuing. Okay, Naomi, this would be good for you. I love you. I'm going to do it. And let's see how God directs my steps this time. Okay. Naomi trusted God and acted in love toward Ruth with his plan. Secondly, Ruth trusted God and acted in love toward Naomi. So we come to verse 6. She's going to do it. She's going to go. I'm imagining she's praying all the way down. We come to verse 6. So she went down to the threshing floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law had commanded her. Verse 7. When Boaz had eaten and drunk, and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain. And she came secretly and uncovered his feet and lay down. Boaz goes to bed happy. Literally, the verse says, his heart was good. See, the harvest is in. His supper was delicious. His God is smiling down upon him. In this state, Boaz drifts off to the happy sleep of a man who's been working hard, who's been doing the right thing, and whom God is blessing. Oh, it's a blessed sleep that Boaz is sleeping. Notice where he went to lie down. Ruth did. He went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain. That is, away from the other workers, where Ruth and he could be alone and unnoticed, where they could talk without anybody overseeing them or overhearing them. And it says, and she came secretly and uncovered his feet. Can you just imagine this? Like, slowly, gingerly, uncovers his feet and lies down. And so she lies down, she's laying there, and she's thinking, okay, now the next step in the plan is, he will wake up and tell me what to do. Okay? Right? So this is where she is. She's lying at the feet of this man, Boaz, her superior by far. And his feet are out in the open. Okay, now why uncover his feet? first, there's several things in this, but the first thing I think that Naomi has thought through, what she's doing is she's setting a natural alarm clock for Boaz so that he'll wake up at the right time. You see, as the night gets later, it gets colder, right? And Boaz, earlier on, when Ruth sneaks up to him and uncovers his feet, it's warm outside, that doesn't bother him. He's happily sleeping, right? We've been to Moody Pastors Conference. Some of these guys, they sleep all through night. You could uncover their feet, no problem. Well, so he's sleeping happily. She uncovers his feet. He's still sleeping. She lays down there. But as the night goes on, it gets colder. It gets colder. Verse 8. It happened that in the middle of the night, see now, when everyone else is asleep, now we're sure no one else is going to be overhearing the conversation. It happened in the middle of the night that the man was startled and bent forward. And behold, a woman was lying at his feet. He was startled. That word means that Boaz trembled. Often it has to do with trembling in fear. Here, I think Boaz is shivering. The reason he's trembling is he's cold. She uncovered his feet. And so he's like, whoa, it's cold. My feet are uncovered. And so, you know, in a kind of a half of sleep, half awake state, he bends forward, no doubt with the intention of covering up his feet so that he can be warm. And as he's bending down to cover up his feet, it says, behold, behold, a woman was lying at his feet. Lo and behold, here's a woman. Now, apparently, there's enough moonlight for him to make out that this is a woman, but not enough light for him to recognize that this is Ruth. You can tell by the way he talks to her, because every other time he sees Ruth, he speaks to her as his daughter. He speaks affectionately to her. Here he does not speak affectionately to her, and Boaz knows enough about threshing floors to be on his guard. He said, who are you? And she answered, I am Ruth, your maid. So spread your covering over your maid, for you are a close relative. Now here, Ruth breaks from the plan that Naomi gave to her. She was instructed to perform these actions and then let Boaz tell her what to do. But who's telling who what to do here? Ruth decides, as she's laying in there, you know, when he wakes up, maybe I should tell him what's going on here. Right? She decides she's going to make her intention clear. And she does so in a beautiful way. I wonder how many times as she walks down there, as she's laying there on the ground beside him, I wonder how many times she rehearses this little speech in her head. And it's perfect. It's perfect. She says, spread your covering over your maid. This is beautiful. There's three levels of meaning to this. One is, okay, what's he doing? He's bending over to cover up his feet. And she's there. And she says, hey, it's not just your feet that are cold and need shelter. Spread your covering over me. Take care of me. I'm needy. And so spread your covering over your maid. It fits that. Also, this phrase, spread your covering over your maid, it was a common expression that meant marriage. She's saying, please marry me. There was an ancient Arab custom. At the time of marriage, the groom would throw a corner of his garment over the bride. And it was a way of symbolizing that, okay, from now on, I'm going to protect this woman. I'm going to take care of her. She's mine, and I take responsibility to cover, to protect, to shelter this woman. And so she says, will you do that, Boaz? Will you throw the corner of your garment over me? Will you marry me? Thirdly, this is beautiful. Ruth is referring to something that Boaz said to her the first time they met. This Hebrew word here has an interesting double meaning. It can mean the corner of a garment, or it can mean the wings of a bird. Now hold your finger here and go back to Ruth chapter 2, verse 12. The first time they meet, here is what Boaz says to Ruth. He says, Ruth 2:12, may the Lord reward your work, and your wages be full from the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to seek refuge. So, when they first met, he said, Ruth, you have come under God's wings for shelter. May he bless you. May he protect you. And now Ruth uses those same words. It's the same phrase. Sometimes it refers to garments. Sometimes it refers to wings. And Ruth is saying, Ruth, will you, Boaz, will you answer that prayer yourself? Will you throw your wings over me? I need sheltered. Will you be God's wings over me? It's beautiful. Spread your covering. Spread your wings over your maid. Marry me, she says. Ruth is a woman of integrity. She doesn't leave it up to him to try to figure out what's going on here at the night. She has a beautiful, humble, sweet way of saying, please take care of me. There's more than just taking care of her and marrying her that's involved, though, right? Spread your covering over your maid, verse 9, for you are a close relative. She's not just saying, please marry me, but he reminds her, and if you marry me, that means take care of Naomi. Because we can have children and continue the family name for Naomi. We can have our children can take over the family farm. You're a close relative. Will you marry me and will you take care of Naomi? You're a relative. We can do this. How do you live the life of faith? Trust in God. Act in love toward others. Find God's blessing. Naomi and Ruth have done so. But what will become of their daring scheme? All depends upon the response of Boaz. Boaz, thankfully, responds the same way. Boaz trusts in God, and he acts in love toward the widows. Look in verse 10. I love the way Boaz talks all the time. Verse 10. Then he said, may you be blessed of the Lord, my daughter. Do you think Ruth just lets out a breath of, like, oh, he's talking kindly, you know? May you be blessed of the Lord, my daughter. You have shown your last kindness to be better than the first by not going after young men, whether poor or rich. Now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you whatever you ask. For all my people in the city know that you are a woman of excellence. This word kindness, he says, may this last kindness is better than your first kindness. It's the word chesed again. It refers to loyal love. What's the first kindness? Well, when he first met her, he said, hey, you have shown loyal love to Naomi by leaving your father and mother and coming to live here. May God bless you for your act of loyal love. Now he says, this second act of loyal love is even better than the first one. Now, who's the recipient of Ruth's act of loyal love here? Who's getting blessed by it? Well, Naomi's getting blessed. Secondly, I think Boaz feels like he's being blessed, right? You see the way that he talks about it. It seems like he's not just excited about taking care of Naomi, but he's excited about marrying Ruth, just by the way he talks. Don't fear, I'll do for you whatever you ask. And then he says, all my people in the city know that you are a woman of excellence. What is it that makes Boaz so excited to marry Ruth? It's her character. He sees excellence in her. Now, one of the things that's really cool, in the Hebrew Bible, the books of the Bible are in a different order than we have them in our Bibles today. And in the Hebrew Bible, you go from Proverbs to Ruth. What's the last chapter of Proverbs about? A virtuous woman. It says in Proverbs 31, an excellent wife, who can find? A woman of excellence, who can find? If you're reading through the Hebrew Bible, you read the last chapter about this woman of excellence. And then the next thing you go, you read Ruth, a story of the woman of excellence. And he says, you are a woman of excellence. I will marry you. It's also beautiful because in chapter 2, verse 1, Boaz, when he was introduced by the narrator, he said, this is a man of excellence. Now, same word, Ruth, you're a woman of excellence. What's drawing these people together is their character. This is the kind of bond that can form a joyous and lasting marriage. However, there's a problem. Verse 12, Boaz says, now it is true, I am a close relative. However, there is a relative closer than I. Uh-oh. Verse 13, remain this night, and when morning comes, if he will redeem you, good, let him redeem you. But if he does not wish to redeem you, then I will redeem you as the Lord lives. Lie down until morning. So there's an unforeseen problem. There's a closer relative. Boaz is a man of integrity. He says, really, I don't have first rights at redeeming you and Naomi. Somebody else does. There's this Mr. So-and-so. And all of us reading the story say, no! This is not supposed to happen! But Boaz says, hey, look, if he won't do it, then I will happily marry you. But I have to go talk to Mr. So-and-so and see if he chooses to redeem you. And if he does, good. If he doesn't, good. I think Boaz is holding himself back a little here. Look, young men, look at how Boaz cares for Ruth. If the Lord blesses you with a girl, here's how you need to take care of her. Boaz protects Ruth's purity. See, they have this conversation, and he says, lie down here, and notice in verse 14, she lies down where? At his feet. I think it's perpendicular, as I understand it from studying it, right? He's lying there. She lies down close enough to him that she will be safe from intruders, but far enough away from him that she's safe from him. I mean, it's a romantic setting. They said beautiful things. It's starlit, but the time for them to be lovers is not yet here. And so he protects her purity. Also, he protects her from physical harm. Why not say, great, go home to Naomi, because if she goes running off in the dark, there's all kinds of things going on around the threshing floor. He doesn't want to expose her to that. You stay here, I'll keep you safe. He protects her purity, he protects her from physical harm, and thirdly, he's going to protect her from any shame or embarrassment. Look in verse 14. So, she lay down at his feet until morning, and rose before one could recognize another. And he said, let it not be known that the woman came to the threshing floor. Now, nothing impure has happened between Ruth and Boaz this night. But if someone sees her sneaking off from the threshing floor, they might think that's the case. And Boaz wants to protect her honor. And so he says, don't let anybody see that you have been here. You need to go home before anyone can recognize you. But as he goes home, he's not going to send her home empty-handed. Look at verse 15. Ruth, I think Boaz wants to communicate with Naomi, because he's probably figured out that she might be involved in this plan. Right? Verse 15. Again, he said, give me the cloak that is on you and hold it. Cloak, this is not her main garment. This is something extra. It's like a veil or a cape or something. And so she held it, and he measured 6 measures of barley and laid it on her. Then she went into the city. Boaz takes 6 scoops of grain. He scoops it into this piece of clothing. Somehow lays it on her. Ruth goes home with this grain. Then we come to verse 16. When she came to her mother-in-law, she said, the mother-in-law, how did it go, my daughter? And she told her all that the man had done for her. She said, these 6 measures of barley he gave to me, for he said, do not go to your mother-in-law empty-handed. Literally, he says, do not go to your mother-in-law empty. Just a chapter and a half ago, Ruth was standing on the streets of Bethlehem and saying, I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. And so here comes Ruth, and he says, don't go home to your mother-in-law empty. Naomi felt that she was empty before. Now for sure she is not empty. She has food to eat. She has a redeemer. She has someone to take care of her. The grain is a promise from Boaz to Naomi that Naomi is never going to be empty again. What a gracious man. And Naomi trusts Boaz, and she trusts Yahweh working through Boaz. Verse 18, then she said, wait, my daughter, until you know how the matter turns out, for the man will not rest until he has settled it today. How do you live the life of faith? How do you know the will of God? You don't have to have everything worked out. You don't have to know what's going to come at the end of your next action. Here's what you do. You trust in God. You act in love towards the people that God puts around you. And then you trust Him. He's going to minister to them through you. Let's pray. Lord, we thank You for this. You do Your work through us, and it's amazing. We're just weak human beings, and we can't orchestrate all things. We don't have this all worked out. Ruth and Naomi didn't know it was going to happen. Boaz didn't know this was going to happen. And yet, through their love for one another, You blessed them. And we're going to see to come, You've blessed each of us through their love for one another. May we live that way. May we trust You. May we take risky, courageous actions of love for the people around us so that they might come to know You and be blessed. Pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen.